let's go around the NFL in the loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Brought to you by Quick Assist. Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston's sports leader, Sports Radio 610.
All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610, and we're about to go around the NFL, which is brought to you by Quick Assist. Tired of the hassle selling your tickets? Say goodbye to the stress and let their experts get you the best price. Download Quick Assist from your app store today, and they'll handle the rest. That's Quickassyst, Quick Assist, your ticket everywhere. And we've got...
Sports Radio 610, Houston Texans breaking news.
That is correct. There is breaking news in the Houston Texans space, and that's because the All-Pro list has been announced. The Associated Press 2024 All-Pro team has been announced, and now the nickname is official. All-Pro Sting, because Derek
that's
Stingley
a good
Jr.
nickname.
Now that's a good nickname.
An All-Pro.
Yeah.
Not no damn closer.
The closer has made All-Pro.
Anybody? Oh, well, I mean, if he wants to be called a pro, he can be called whatever he wants.
Now first, he can.
First team All-Pro cornerback, Derek Stingley Jr. alongside Patrick Surtain II. Just fascinating and incredible for him. I mean, well-deserved. Incredibly well-deserved.
Incredibly well-deserved. And, you know, this is one of those things. You know, we came into the show this morning, like, pumped up, hyped up. You know, how's this team going to be able to pull this off when everybody, and I'm using that loosely, but everybody's against them? That's one of the big reasons right there, man. We mentioned him by name. If he can make those types of plays, which he's want to make, and so nice to just have that. First time since 2019 that the Texans have a first-team All-Pro.
And it's a good story with Darius Stingley, too.
Because DeAndre Hopkins being that first-teamer in 2019.
It's a good story with Darius Stingley, too, man. Just how he came into the league and dealt with the injuries and stuff like that. And then Sauce Gardner pretty much getting All-Pro his first year. Mm-hmm. And he stayed low and build. That's the definition of stay low and build.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, and there he is. You have an All-Pro cornerback now, and Derek Stingley Jr., first team All-Pro even. So you want to make sure to give him that credit. That's, his 56.9 passer rating versus him, like just incredibly low mm-hmm. when you throw at his direction. 5 touchdowns, 5 interceptions thrown at him, and some of those touchdowns were like early on in the season that really – it really tamped down once you got to a certain point in the season. Man, Stingley was incredible, and it's good that he got that level of recognition in being an All-Pro. Some other things that are kind of like breaking in this moment, some real recent news about a former Texan, Deshaun Watson. So we were talking about how they're in Cleveland. The general manager was like, oh, yeah, he suffered a setback. Y'all.
Yeah.
Didn't believe.
Oh, don't act.
Y'all.
Whoa.
Y'all
whoa,
didn't believe.
Whoa. Y'all
thought that this was some shenanigans.
Hey, if you want to be real, after you break this story, I don't know if I still believe this.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, really?
What we are
referring to is the news that Deshaun Watson underwent surgery Thursday after tearing his Achilles again. So the idea of the setback, apparently the setback was a retorn Achilles. And so he's undergone surgery. The status for 2025 is now at the very least in jeopardy. And it feels like he's done, right?
Did he hurt it? Did he tear it dancing? I mean, we saw just 2 days ago he was dancing on TikTok. But no, look, you had a great point. And I'm not going to steal your thunder as we were talking about this during the break. And so set it up because I totally agree on this.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like the two sides of quarterbacking. Like, this is the physical aspect gone, but it felt like the mental aspect was gone for him as well. Like, we saw him returning. Was that before this season? It's like, all right, he had dealt with some nagging injuries. Maybe you could attribute some of his poor play to that. With him healthy, is he going to be able to do this? And it still looked abysmal. And so you had to turn around and say, okay, maybe this is something in his head.
Mm-hmm.
But at least then he still had the physical aspect of it. I mean, now if you have another Achilles tear as you're trying to rehab, you're getting another Achilles tear. Like, it just feels like the physical aspect of it for him is completely lost. And at that point, what do you hang your hat on
exactly
for this guy?
He was already a mental mess. I don't think very many people will argue that. And now he's a physical mess, at least for the foreseeable future. He's done. He's certainly done in Cleveland.
Yeah, I was about to say done overall career done or
he's got to be.
He's done. He's done. He's got to be career done.
Who's going to pick him up? Who's going to pick up the contract? Who's going to pick up
the only way I can see him maybe being back in the league is if he not obviously not making that money.
Yeah,
but he coattail on somebody's team as a fourth string or something like that.
He's trying to work his way in. You take a flyer on him in 2 years.
That's what I'm saying.
What are you taking a flyer on? He's not played at the caliber of being a starter. That has been abundantly clear, right?
Yeah.
What are the things that are necessary to be a backup quarterback in this league? Like, having a problematic backup quarterback is not something that people want, right?
Right approach, all of
those types of things are things that you need. None of those things really feel like they strike that Deshaun Watson strikes of. So, like, I don't see any reason why a team would go and like, hey, we need a backup quarterback. Does Deshaun Watson work? Like, I don't think that looks like it. Feels like once you get to 2027 and the Browns are able to get him fully off of their cap, which by the way, I'm sure that Browns insurance policy, they're like, all right, we're gonna cash that and see if we get some cap relief. That'll be nice. Once in 2027, where it's most advantageous for them to finally get off of his books, I think that he has donezo in the NFL.
Yeah, and you mentioned that mental aspect of it. It's a mental thing to try to become a backup.
That's because what I'm saying, approach.
A lot of people, the quarterbacks that starters, they struggle with taking that back seat, being QB number two or three.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to have to go through that part of it. Yeah, I don't know if he's willing to go through that part.
Yeah, I mean, really and truly, like, one of the things I like saying is maybe the most important thing, quality about a backup quarterback is being likable.
Yes.
And that has plummeted for Deshaun Watson in various different ways. So, man, that the text line 68620, they said, I don't wish injury on anyone, but got to confess, this feels a little bit like football gods dishing out karma. Maybe so.
How are they feeling in Cleveland?
Yeah.
Honestly, they celebrated him getting carted off the field. I'm sure they're celebrating right now, too.
Yeah, I can't imagine that there's a lot of people who are torn up about this. So I mean, I'm sure at the best, like, people are kind of neutral. Like, damn, that kind of sucks. However, there's ways that this makes it better on the Browns. And the Browns had already made it abundantly clear that they were planning on trying to bring in some level of quarterback play to at least compete with him. Now you're just going to need to go find a quarterback that you feel comfortable running 18, 17 games with.
Yeah, and from Deshaun's point of view, he got all his $230 million.
Guarantees.
And frankly, you know, from what we know, and maybe it's just, you know, a little bit unfair. I don't think so, but I'm just giving him the benefit of the doubt. That's all he wants.
Yeah.
That's all he wanted.
Yeah, so, I mean, he probably don't even care to play again.
Because keep in mind, when they were trying to get rid of him here after everything, and actually he wanted out before the scandal broke, as people will remember, he was trying to renegotiate a contract that he had already received here. That was part of the deal.
A contract that didn't even kick in.
Yes. He was trying to. So it was all about the money from the very, very start. And look at this. I'm looking at his game log right now. 2021. This was the year in Houston. You know, for various reasons. He played zero games.
Mm-hmm.
2022. 6 games.
Sure.
2023, 7 games. 2024, 7 games.
That brother cashed in, man.
He, not durable, obviously. Some of that was the scandal. A lot of it was injury. Bad attitude, injured, a mental mess. I mean, you might be right.
Yeah.
He might be done.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
This is one of those instances where I'll stand on the table and say, no, I'm not. I might be right. I am right.
It's not an opinion. I know.
No, that's a fact.
If he was to make it back, it would be the comeback story that we have seen in the last decade of the league. And I just, America has quite a capacity for the comeback story and giving second chances. I don't know if it goes that far. We might be reaching the boundaries. Mm-hmm.
And with all the money he's making from this, why would he want to come back?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, unless you just want to prove that you still got one season or
guaranteed
something.
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
$230 million.
Hey, just travel the world with your girl, man.
Well, he is.
It's over. Yeah. Take the L out of love. It's over, brother. Mm-hmm.
Some of the other stories around the NFL. We mentioned that Rams-Vikings, the wild card game that was supposed to be hosted at SoFi Stadium, they were considering the idea of moving it yesterday. They made it official that wild card game will move to State Farm Stadium in Arizona due to the, you know, L.A. wildfires that are still raging on to this point. They said the decision was made in consultation with public officials locally. And I know one of the things we immediately talked about was, like, kind of the emotional impact, like, mm-hmm. the kind of people going through this traumatic thing and then having a game. One of the things I completely forgot, and you know, I'll raise my hand that you know, this is a real oversight. Remember, that is technically an outdoor stadium. They have kind of the cantilever overhang.
Oh, in L.A.
In L.A.
Yeah.
Well, that's technically an outdoor stadium. The air quality in L.A. has been really, really rough.
The smoke
due
is
to
hitting the stadium
this.
Now.
Yes.
As of this morning.
Absolutely. So I can't imagine. I mean, even just outside getting people to the game with that kind of air quality would be problematic. But on the field, I imagine the air quality would be really bad. And playing football in that would just be a workplace malpractice of sorts. So yeah, that game officially will move to Arizona, and it'll be interesting to see what the stadium makeup looks like in that instance, being in Phoenix.
Oh, I think it's wide open now, man. I mean, it's good news for the Vikings, certainly. But I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, you can't play in L.A. and you just make the most of it there.
Yeah, so it'll be Monday at 7 p.m. Central still, but this time in Phoenix. Some other things around the NFL. We mentioned that the NFL has announced their London schedule, or at least the teams that will be playing in London. It'll be the Jets, Browns, and Jaguars who will give up home games to play in London in 2025. We obviously don't know who they will play in those instances. That'll come with the schedule release later in the year, but the only team that the Texans are playing of those three, of course, is the Jaguars. So
on the road,
of course. Yeah. So that is the only one that you have the opportunity and the plausibility of maybe going to going overseas for.
Yeah, and that would be the Jaguars, I still am very much convinced the Texans will play a game overseas this year. It's been a while. Number one, last year they were scheduled tentatively, as I understand it, to go overseas, but then they had the Hall of Fame game because of Andre Johnson. That's the second reason. They were already going to be scheduled last year. So I think the Texans will be there. I don't know if it'll be the Jags, but we'll find out.
We'll find out indeed. One more thing. I guess a couple more things. Zay Flowers, wide receiver for the Baltimore Ravens, big important player for them. He is going to miss the Ravens wildcard matchup versus the Steelers. And I bring this up, if for no other reason, to say that that was one of the games that I was like, I am very strongly feeling like, hey, man, the Ravens should absolutely win this one, cover all those types of things. Mm-hmm. This gets a little more dicey for me now. I know that we had somebody text in, I don't know if it was yesterday or 2 days ago, about, hey, man, this is one of those division matchups, you know, teams that have, you know, seen each other a good amount, you know, common opponents or what have you. And that game can get a little messy. In fact, it was messier earlier this year when they played. And that felt like, hey, man, the Ravens have found their stride, especially defensively. However, without Zay Flowers, who is very vital to their passing game, he's one of those guys you get the ball to in space. He does some really good things. They target him frequently. This game feels like it has the possibility against Squirrely, man.
It has the possibility. I wouldn't bet on it because I mean, we're looking at some highlights right now. They have weapons, man. They have big weapons with or without Zay Flowers.
9.5-point favorites the Baltimore Ravens.
There. But I do buy into, it's not like exclusively me, but I mean, I'm one of the people that buys into the whole division thing. Like that's going to be the proverbial slugfest. I think the Steelers are going to show up a little bit. I don't think they can hold up, but I think they're going to show up and make it interesting.
Yeah. So we'll see that. That will be the other Saturday game. That's the one that is at 7 p.m. on Prime Video after the Texans are, you know, done with the Chargers, whatever that result ultimately looks like. Speaking of Texans, Chargers, that'd be a roundabout way of getting there. But
you can do it. Pull it through.
All right.
Pull it through.
Here we go.
The transition king.
Let's see. This ain't even a joke. I'm just like, let's see if I can do the mental gymnastics.
Speaking of Texans Chargers.
Yes. Aziz Al-Shaair makes his return. Well, I mean, he made his return last week. But Aziz Al-Shaair has the opportunity to play with Christian Harris. And you know,
I knew you could do it.
That return is an exciting part. Of course, the reason why that return is exciting is because you missed 3 weeks due to the suspension with the hit that was heard around the world on the slide that Trevor Lawrence had when they were facing off. Well, Trevor Lawrence spoke about Aziz Al-Shaair for the first time. How did you feel about this response?
Al-Shaair ever call?
No. Uh-uh. Never talked to him, no.
You disappointed in him ever?
Pretty
dirty hit.
I think it's, obviously it's something that, you know, I've kind of wanted to move on from, try to stay away from
try to stay away from commenting on the whole deal. You know, I think it's a tough situation. Yeah, I mean, obviously, part of you is like, yeah, it would have been nice to reach out, but I know he's got his own stuff going on, and he's trying to, I think a lot of that is he's trying to fight for his reputation on his end, and I don't think personally attacking the guy is the right answer. You know, I know guys that know him, and everyone says he's a great guy. I don't know him personally, so obviously the hit was, I don't think the hit was right, but I also don't think that, I think if he knew that was going to happen, he wouldn't do it. You know, that's, I would hope no person would do that if they knew the end result.
I thought that was extremely classy, tactful, good on Trevor Lawrence for handling it like that. But, you know, I do think it's a little, and there's probably a good reason, like Trevor Lawrence said. It's a little curious that Aziz Alshaier reached out to everyone, John Runyon, you know, the NFL, Roger Goodell, but not Trevor. That was a little weird.
When you talk about reaching out to the league office,
it was a different reason, different, but still, he was trying to.
It feels different than, you know, reaching out to Trevor. But yeah, you would imagine that maybe that would have happened. But I think Aziz has, I think he's made it abundantly clear that there was no malintent there. And it's nice that it seems like Trevor Lawrence also has that general feeling. Mm-hmm. Now, you could tell didn't like the hit. Like, he did not enjoy the hit. Yeah. But I appreciate Trevor Lawrence.
That reporter that asked the question didn't enjoy that hit either.
Drama.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a dirty hit.
I'm like, all right, man. Take the battery out, man.
Trying to sow discord. I see.
It was a dirty hit.
It was a dirty hit.
But yeah, I guess, again, salute to Trevor Lawrence in that instance for not making it messier than it needed to be and being respectful of our guy, Aziz Alshaier. All right. That's around the NFL here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's talk more about this wild card game that's going on tomorrow. Where do the Texans have a coaching advantage? 713-572-4610. Let's discuss that next.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
All right, let's get into where the Texans have, or if the Texans have, coaching advantages in this wild card matchup. Before I do that, I did want to, you know, before we get into like the kind of adversarial kind of feeling between the Texans and the Chargers that obviously is inherent to playing a competition, how about the community type feel? Because the Houston Texans doing a good service and being good friends and brothers of, you know, Los Angeles, the Los Angeles area, Los Angelinos, as they like to call it, as the Texans announced not more than about 10 minutes ago that they're donating $1 million to provide support and resources for those who have been impacted by the wildfires in Southern California.
I'll say salute. I was just going to say it, Figgy, because that is a true salute. Big time. $1 million? Big time.
Yeah.
Good on them.
Yeah, salute.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, terrible things happening out that way. And so thoughts and prayers with many people. I know personally a lot of people who evacuated, and unfortunately some people that have lost their homes. I know that recently I was hearing about J.J. Redick had lost his home.
Yeah, Steve Kerr, I think the house he grew up in is gone. And he said he just had dinner there with his parents a couple weeks ago or something like that.
Yeah, man. And unfortunately, even more so, like, it would be one thing if you go, all right, J.J. Redick, he got money, it's cool, but it's affecting, you know, the people who have a lot of money and the people who don't alike. Like, this this is really...
Yeah, ain't no price on that, man.
No, there's not.
Yeah, a lot of valuable stuff money can't buy.
That's right.
I looked up yesterday because my daughter was asking me about it. Some of the celebrities that have lost... I mean, it is a long list of celebrities.
Yeah.
And a texter... actually, I just got a DM from one of our listeners... ask this question. I think it's a legitimate question. I mean, these players, you know, how much focus has been lost this week? Whether it's direct, you know, their homes or families' homes or displaced, or you know, whatever it may be, just in general, the wildfires affect. I mean, it's a legitimate question.
It is, especially the players that's playing in California.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a lot of players that are from California and those types of things, right? Like, that have had family affected. I know that the Rams lost a practice day because, you know, they just kind of got sent home due to, you know, the advancing of the fires. So, yeah, man, a lot of people going through some rough things in the last week or so, particularly in Southern California. So, yeah, good on the Texans, again, displaying a little bit of brotherly love in this moment. But this the one place where you don't want them to be all lovey-dovey is on the football field, the matchup between the Texans and the Chargers.
Man,
where
he pulls that off every
do
time,
the
man.
Texans...
He pulls that
the transition
off every
king,
time.
Man.
All right. Where do the Texans have a coaching advantage in this?
This is interesting. You almost have to squint to find a coaching advantage, a coaching advantage. Like, we love what D'Amico Ryans. I went in yesterday on, I think D'Amico Ryans is the secret sauce defensively, et cetera. But do you give him the coaching advantage over Jim Harbaugh? No. No, you don't. The experience. What has he been?
Like the overall coaching advantage.
Yes, as a head coach.
I would say no.
I don't feel like you can. I mean, three AFC championship games, college national championship, you know, being able to do that, experience matters in the postseason. Experience absolutely matters in the postseason as a head coach. I don't think you can.
Yeah.
I don't think it's something that should even be argued.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
If you'll allow me to try and play some level of devil's advocate here, though. One of the things that I think might level this in some ways, and you're right. Game management is one of those things that you go, okay, those are the things that show up. Those are the things that, you know, we end up yelling about or tweeting about in the moment on the game. Like, why are you doing this in this moment? I think that you have some things in this that normalize as D'Amico Ryans has had a few moments this year that have been a little head scratching in managing games. But also, Jim Harbaugh has some of that as well. I was alluding to their willingness to go for it in certain instances. And these are both pretty conservative coaches going for it, just in general, but particularly in, you know, and this is like leaning on analytics models that kind of determine when it is most advantageous to go for it, maybe on a fourth down. And both of these guys are pretty conservative and even in situations where you probably should, I guess, according to our best guesses, our best analytics models, should go for it. And I do wonder if that kind of translates out to, hey, these guys are both going to be relatively conservative and not necessarily give an advantage in that way of, hey, making the right decision or, you know, going for it and pushing for it in certain instances where they're really just going to allow the players on the field to determine this more than like kind of changing the game with the decisions from the sideline.
I think D'Amico Ryans is well ahead of the curve in terms of management and being a head coach and leader of men. I think he's way ahead of the curve. But I don't think it's fair to Jim Harbaugh, frankly. And maybe we shouldn't be in the business of being fair to say he does not have the coaching advantage here. But let's go beyond that.
Okay.
Offensive coordinator. I mean...
Well, are you going straight up offensive coordinator? Or are you going offensive coordinator versus defensive coordinator? Right, like because those are the matchups we have here, right?
But let's just go like play callers. You know, what Bobby Slowick has done, what Greg Roman has done with that offense. You know, and Justin Herbert. You got to give it to Greg Roman.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I find it more interesting to look at the offensive coordinator versus the defensive coordinator that they will be matching up against because
that's Jesse Minter. Pretty good, but he's not D'Amico.
No.
Now, there is a connection, though. His dad, Rick Minter, is sort of the analyst. You know, he's sort of the overseer on the defense. So he's getting a lot of input from a guy that's been in the league for a long time. In fact, I think he was a defensive coordinator for the Eagles, if not for the Super Bowl run, right in that area. You know, right in that time. He had the Eagles, you know, playing pretty good football defensively. So maybe that's a wash. I don't know. Maybe you give it to the Texans simply because of D'Amico. So.
Well, yeah, if you're going defense coordinator versus defense coordinator. Yeah. But when it comes to like Bobby Slowick versus Jesse Minter, as we'll see in these, this is a really interesting matchup. Like, this is the side of the football that I'm most concerned about. I know if you just go off of like points scored, this is a good defense for the Chargers. I think that might be a little bit misleading with this defense. I think that the defense is somewhat gettable. We've talked about the fact that like explosive exists. However, like this is just generally a team that largely does their job. It's like a real blue-collar team that you're looking at with the Los Angeles Chargers. And I think that that's a credit to Jesse Minter. And I think that details, right, I don't remember which week it was that we were talking about with this Texas team. It's like, hey, man, getting the details right is one of the things that matters a good amount. And it feels like particularly on this defense, they do a good job of getting the details right. Now, those cornerbacks, like talent-wise, are guys that can be got at. And so I do think that there's an opportunity there, and maybe then, as Bobby Slowick has talked about explosives, that's something that he's looking at that could give him an advantage. But this one feels kind of stalematey.
It might be. But then there's this, you know, familiarity with each other's personnel and play calling and how they approach certain game plans, etc. You know, Shane Day was here last year.
Yeah.
With C.J. Stroud when C.J. had his best season. He was the offensive analyst with Gerard Johnson and Bobby Slowick. And C.J. had his best year, obviously, thus far. Shane Day is now with the Chargers. And, in fact, Jim Harbaugh talked about tapping into that.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much that's on tape already. But, yeah, I'm trying to tap a little more, you know, any kind of insight.
Yeah, so he's been chatting it up with Shane Day. I'm sure everybody has over there.
Yeah,
I mean, he knows. You know, he knows. Sure.
That's how it should go.
Yeah,
and I mean, from the 832, they say y'all think the Harbaugh brothers talk to each other about how to play the Texans, especially
that too.
Since the Ravens.
100%,
absolutely.
And I think Jim Harbaugh was talking to John last season when they played in the playoffs because he's familiar with C.J. Stroud in college.
Yeah,
yeah, but I mean, even beyond that, like that's just how this industry works. Is that. And maybe not even as much at the top with the head coaches, but, you know, coordinators or what have you, or position coaches. It's a very insidious, you know, industry. Like, you have worked with these people that end up in different places. You have a network across the league. When it's time to face off, especially in those in big games, big ticket games, or like, like this, like playoff game, you reach out to your network and, hey, what do you know? And, you know, what can you tell me about this specific thing? And so, yeah, they're all going to leverage that, and it only makes sense that Jim and John would, you know, use that leverage. Now, what gets tough is that they're both in the same division, or same, not division, same conference now.
Yeah.
So I do wonder how far-reaching that is, considering that, hey, you could end up in a place where all that information comes back to bite you, and you're facing off against each other. But, yeah, no, I would strongly imagine that that level of information is passed, because that's just kind of how the business is done.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, even outside the whole brothers thing, just people with relationships.
Absolutely.
Just reach out. Somebody could reach out to Robert Saleh because he coached against this quarterback at one point or something like, you know, it's all type of relationships. So a lot of reaching out just to kind of get more information.
And remember when we were torching Mike Devlin here as the offensive line coach?
Yeah.
Torching him.
Who don't remember that?
And it doesn't look better.
He's with the LA Chargers now.
Is he? I didn't know that.
Their offensive line has a couple. You know, they've been more than okay.
Yeah, they've been pretty solid. Yeah. How much do you make that about the actual talent that you have? But I mean, a lot of the talent is fairly similar from his time here with the Texans. And you've seen how that is kind of eroded in some ways. The play has. You hope that stabilizes with the five that you got out there now. This feels like the coaching does, like there's not a really stark advantage. The most interesting of the matchups for me is Greg Roman's offense, where, you know, they're going to run the ball effectively and use that to play action pass, versus D'Amico Ryans' defense, where what you see is what you get, but they're going to try and do it to the highest level. If D'Amico can have his guys disciplined, tackling well, I think he'll have the advantage there. And maybe that's one of the few places that you might have a stark advantage, if at all.
Yeah, no, I agree, but someone mentioned this, and I think this is one that it's clearly checked for the Texans. That's Frank Ross with special teams.
Yes,
I think that one you can say, hey, the Chargers have an advantage just about everywhere when it comes to coaching and experience and tapping into that. Those connections, et cetera. But I think Frank Ross probably is the one big connection.
And if you didn't know, Sally was a big college football fan on the YouTube. She said, and Jim doesn't have his cheater buddy with him in L.A. All right, we're gearing up for the playoffs, and you should gear up for the playoffs at Academy Sports and Outdoors. Thanks to our friends at Academy for getting us ready for this weekend with our new Ready to Roll playoff shirts and division championship hats. You can get yours at your local Academy Sports and Outdoors before this weekend. All right, coming up next, let's get into what's popping, including another Rockets victory. We'll talk about that next.
The biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
All right. Somehow we've packed this segment in, so let's get to it. What's poppin' on this Football Friday, headed into a wild card matchup tomorrow versus the Chargers? Clearly that's happening. Excited for that. But yesterday, Houston Rockets on the road, facing off against the Memphis Grizzlies, and of course, right in time, the Grizzlies get back a large complement of their best players. Ja Morant returns to play, Desmond Bane returns to play, amongst others, and you go, oh man, this is going to be a real test, and it was,
yeah.
And the Rockets passed it, 119-115, with some really good nights from Jalen Green, Alperen Şengün. Hey, Fred VanVleet had a pretty good night, including helping put this thing, salt this thing away. Really good victory. We'll talk more about it later in the show, but a really good victory for the Rockets team against a high level team in the West and maintaining the second place in the West spot that they
and
have.
And getting
right now
a potential tiebreaker, or going well on their way to getting a tiebreaker against Memphis.
Yeah,
because they're 2-0 against them. And I believe they have two more games, so just one more, or at least two more games, but one more should do it. And it felt to me kind of like a mini version of Cleveland Cavaliers and Oklahoma City Thunder. Like, it was a pretty, you know, some high stakes. They weren't on these big win streaks or anything, but some high stakes, you know, a lot on the line. You're facing a team that is direct competition with you for where you are. Although those were, you know, in different conferences, but you know, direct competition with you to be, you know, in that spot. And Jalen Green strung together another game, man.
Yeah,
I mean, he's been putting a few together.
Yeah, I mean, and one of the things that was really cool, some like 45 points in the first quarter, just got out there,
mm-hmm.
and that was one of the things that made it feel similar too. Both those teams were putting up buckets,
yeah,
to start the game. But it's good to see the Rockets have that. 25-12 are your Rockets now. As I mentioned, good for second. And this is, I think, tied for seventh of the best start that they've had through 37 games, the Rockets as a franchise. Like, 25 wins in your first 37 is tied for seventh.
It's real, man.
This is a really good basketball
team. It's real. No question about it.
Their next game will be Saturday versus tomorrow versus the Hawks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that one also starts at 2. Yeah, guys, that's going to be a little tough to keep track of.
Tell me about that one.
Yeah. That'll happen to State Farm Arena. Some other things that are popping. We'll talk about this more in Figgy's mixtape as well. So I guess we're just teasing in what's popping. But Rodeo Houston has officially announced their lineup. It happened last night. Figgy Figs was out there NRG Center?
Yeah, NRG Center.
Where the event was. And we were wrong in a lot of ways, but still, a lot of interesting things here.
Loud and wrong.
Loud and wrong.
Although, I think Lopez mentioned this one. I don't know if you...
I mentioned Luke Bryan. I mentioned Parker McCollum. And I mentioned Brad Paisley.
I thought you mentioned... I thought you mentioned Journey.
I did mention Journey.
That was the one that stuck out to me.
Hey, man, I got 5 right. How about that?
You should have signed up for the little office contest.
I should have. I didn't enter it.
You wouldn't have won. You didn't have Post Malone, who is one of the big names. He is the wild card that they were alluding to. Bun B again plies his trade with mm-hmm. the Bun B birthday bash. It'll be interesting to see who he brings along with him for the hip hop night. And Grupo Frontera. Going to be out there for Tejano night, mm-hmm. Which I believe is a Sunday. Which I'm already thinking about going to. I'm not going to lie.
I'm telling you. Look, I have often said I'm not a huge country fan. I'll occasionally listen. If someone else is listening, I enjoy it and all that. So I'm not. But you had to know, you know, Parker McCollum, Brooks and Dunn, Luke Bryan, you know, all those are going to be huge. Reba's opening it.
Reba McIntyre,
that was the shocking one to me. I didn't expect Reba.
Reba's opening it. So you had to be. Those are going to be big hits. But to me, this is about the non-country artists. Like you know, Bun B, you know, obviously always a hit here. Journey, that's huge. Like,
that's the one I want to go to.
Yeah,
man.
Journey's going to fill it up. There is no question about it. And I think if you're looking at an act that's going to potentially set a new record, a attendance record, which is always something that they're looking, you know, to do, I think Grupo Frontera is going to get it done. They're big. It's a big day. It's a Sunday afternoon, I believe. They always do the Tejano Day on the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be big time.
I'm not a huge concert guy myself,
mm-hmm.
but there's a few of these that at least, you know how sometimes you're like, oh, I'm going to go to that, and then eventually you'll see if you actually do. At least on the front side of, I want to go to that. There's a lot of them, and that's probably the, you know, objective when you're getting these lineups. And hopefully people deliver.
And Post Malone.
Posty, absolutely.
And Posty
is going to be a big one. Somebody said that they're super excited to see Cody Jinx again. Shout out to
Yeah, Lowe. I see a lot of people excited about Cody Jinx. It was another one. I wasn't familiar with his work, but mm-hmm. I want to say it was Riley Green. A lot of people was excited about Riley Green. So
we should have tapped in. Wait, the baseball player? we should have tapped into with Nick and seeing if we could get
I'm
him
see.
On.
Yeah,
I might
get him to. Do something for the mixtape.
All right.
Perfect. To kind of give us a breakdown, maybe get us hype for that.
I got Nick Russo of 100.3 The Bull might give us a little bit of his insight on lineup. And apparently not everybody loves it, but Nick seems to have some positivity towards it. So we'll break that down later. Some other things that are popping. We reached the arbitration last time because you might have remembered yesterday if you were listening, giving updates on the Astros getting deals done, their arbitration cases before going to a hearing. And they actually do all eight. They get all eight of their players who were arbitration eligible, settle those before going to hearing. They'll pay a total of $44.75 million to those eight players, including $18 million to Framber Valdez, which feels like a deal, man.
That does. And, you know, because $18 million for when he's at his best, and he's, you know, he's kind of an up and down, is he an ace, is he not an ace kind of guy, but he's definitely worth $18 million. You know, yeah. He's that level of pitcher. Yeah, no question.
The average annual value that he gets at $18 million ranks 32nd mm-hmm. with starting pitchers in the MLB compared to, like, even Yusei Kikuchi is getting 21.2.
There you go.
When it comes down to it. So, yeah, this feels like the Astros doing good work mm-hmm. on this. And if you compare that to a name that is very familiar around here, Kyle Tucker, who just got
that
traded.
Poor guy. Well, not literally poor, but.
Yeah, no, he will not literally be poor, especially if he has something to say about it, because he is actually going to go to a hearing with mm-hmm. the Cubs. They introduce themselves. Mm-hmm. It's like, hi, we're the Cubs. Hi, I'm Kyle Tucker. Let's fight about money. The Cubs immediately, they're putting in for the arbitration a $15 million mm-hmm. Case. And he, Kyle Tucker, that is asking for 17.5, a $2.5 million difference between the two on the arbitration case, which I believe is the most of anybody this year.
I think it is, yeah.
And so, yeah, that's going to be an interesting one and an interesting place to start. I saw that there was Cubs fans that were like, oh, man, that's Cub. Like, that's how they exist. Like, mm-hmm. just not settling with a player that you're bringing in. But, yeah, that'll be interesting to watch. But I think that's also part and parcel of a clear indication of why it was probably going to be best that they moved on from Kyle Tucker, even though he was probably your best player at that point. Like, it's just, hey, man, the money that he was going to want, we saw this with, you know, previous arbitration cases with him. And then also knowing that, hey, man, that free agency, when it did come around, was probably going to be tough to negotiate with. So they got some things back, and now he's the Cubs to deal with and find some middle ground on.
He's got to be sitting there going, man, what do I got to do?
To get this money. Yeah,
what do I got to do?
What has to happen for
it's
me?
It's year to after get this year, money? Man. And yeah. He'll get it, but he's going to have to prove it again.
Yeah, he will have to prove it again. Somebody said, yo, did Reg just roll his R on Frontera?
Frontera.
Was I not supposed to?
Yeah, you've been taking Spanish.
I mean, I've been working on it, man. That's yeah. why. That's why I'm
hey,
about to.
Hey, they ain't spent the black brother the roll his tongue like that. Yeah, when it comes to Spanish,
I'm not even an Afro Latino. It's not like I'm a Panamanian and I got that.
Oh,
in
you
there.
Dominican?
I'm not Dominican, man. I'm just working on it. I'm trying to be respectful of our brothers and sisters in Latinidad, as I like to say, even though that doesn't really make any sense. How about this? This is just an interesting thing that I saw as being a Houstonian who reads the local newspaper. So apparently, being 67 years old. Mm-hmm. But the Houston Chronicle, what, you got mad at me?
No, no, I'm younger than that.
It's like, doesn't hurt my feelings.
That's an old guy.
That's hilarious. The Houston Chronicle had an interesting piece about some Galveston seafood restaurants lying about having Gulf shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I feel like this is a very greater Houston area scandal, but a scandal nonetheless, because there was a consulting firm, CD Consulting, that did a report about shrimp. In the area.
What kind of shrimp, Figgy?
Gulf shrimp.
Shrimp is the fruit of the sea. You can barbecue it, boil it, broil it, bake it, saute it. There's shrimp kebabs, shrimp creole, shrimp gumbo, pan fried, deep fried, stir fried. There's pineapple shrimp, lemon shrimp, coconut shrimp, pepper shrimp, shrimp soup, shrimp stew, shrimp salad. Shrimp and potatoes, shrimp burger, shrimp sandwich. That's about it.
Yeah, all that.
Now I really want some coconut shrimp. I'm not gonna lie. But apparently, they tested 44 restaurants, and roughly 40% of them, only roughly 40% of them, actually use Gulf shrimp as advertised.
Look, I think this is first of all, it's really, really bad business practice because it's deceptive. You're deceiving your customer.
Yeah, I was going to ask Lopez, you the expert, explain how bad this
is. Yeah, okay.
Explain to me like I'm five years old.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not sure if I have, is this just, hey, false advertising, or does this matter in a big way?
Well, it does, because that's where I was going, after the obvious of it's deceptive business practice. Okay, let's just establish that. You shouldn't be doing it. But imported shrimp are horrible for our ecosystem, first of all. So you're going to have to keep those shrimp somewhere to keep them fresh. A lot of times, whether they're I don't know if you're importing them live. Live is the worst way you can import shrimp because there are so many, bacteria and diseases that affect other shrimp. And this is the Bite Me podcast coming out in me and all my experience on the water. Like, this is the worst thing you can do for Gulf shrimp, is to bring those types of shrimp in on top of the deception. So this is bad, and that absolutely needs to be addressed.
Somebody said, I'm from the Gulf and they lie about it. Haha, they suck. Yeah, man, be careful, man. This is just a PSA from your friends in the loop. Hey, keep your eye out when you see that Gulf shrimp.
Yeah, man, this might be for Gazy.
Now, is this Gulf or
Which Gulf? Which Gulf are we talking about?
This stepped on.
Like the Gulf of Mexico?
Nah, this ain't clear cut. This stepped on.
Especially because, hey, man, when they put that Gulf on there, they start raising them prices on it.
Yeah.
That's the real nasty business of it all.
It's like
it?
When they say, assembled in America.
Right.
Well, what does that mean? All the parts are made elsewhere.
That's right. That's exactly what that means. Look at you. Look at you having some... Some weird.
See, all my outdoorsmen are like, preach, Lopez. No, it's bad. Like importing shrimp is bad for us.
I just don't want to be paying premiums, Gulf shrimp premiums, without getting my Gulf shrimp.
Mm-hmm. I'm just mad I seen this article after we ate that pink shrimp from Timmy Chan's.
That's right. I guarantee you that wasn't Gulf shrimp.
Yeah. Whatever Gulf that was, I don't know. Yes, I knew somebody was going to say Gulf of America. I too have seen the recent news. No need to go deeper into that, but I appreciate you. You're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, who will be the most important non-QB on the field for the Texans? In other words, who are the X factors for this one? 713-572-4610. Let's do that next.